We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand, that fine gentleman over there. The one, the only, still the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. This episode, all our episodes, driven by our good friends over at Geico. Dan Rubenstein, sir!
Yeah.
What's going on, man? How you been?
I've been great. I'm excited to do a public Q&A. We've been doing the weekly Brew and A on verballers.com, on our Patreon, weekly, live for patrons, and it's been incredibly fun. Today we've got a plan. We're doing sort of a mega one with a part one and part two, and part two goes exclusively to Patreon, is my understanding. I'm especially excited for today's Q&A, both because we have fantastic questions and I am especially well rested. My wife is out of town, Jody with an I, out of town the last couple nights. And last night I made a very specific plan and had a semita, which is sort of like a Mexican sandwich, a torta type sandwich on a crustier roll, breaded chicken, avocado, cheese, beans, whatever. Had it delivered the moment I put down my older child. I ordered it like 2 p.m. to be delivered at 7:30 and grabbed the sandwich, sat on my couch, watched Encanto, and went to sleep.
Wow.
And it was a wonderful little evening for me. So I feel great.
Well, welcome back in. It's great to have you with us and vibrant.
Yeah.
And ready to attack just a meaty slate of questions. Ooh. That we got from the Verballerhood. Very excited to do this, not only in one part, but two parts. Second part, as you said, will be available on verballers.com. Also now available on verballers.com. Extra Nuggets. It's a new show that you are doing with our friend Adam Amin. It is available exclusively to our Patreon community out there at verballers.com. All throughout the month of March, we are going to be posting new episodes every Wednesday morning. And unlike most of the podcasts that I think you listen to, we are actively seeking your feedback and your help. This is a Solid Verbal lab project. And
correct.
So we very much value your input. We very much value your feedback. We want to make it better. And so if you join verballers.com and give it a listen, we're going to give you every option when it comes to giving us feedback. We're excited.
Yes. I don't know what every option means, but I think it just means that you can be like, it stinks, like Jay Sherman. And that's okay. Please be nice. We've been working on it for a long time. Should we get to some questions?
We should get to some questions. Let's do it. I'm ready. Let's dive in.
All right.
I got my sound. I actually charged up my iPad here.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
As often as we can, Dan, and actually once a week on Patreon.
Yes.
We like to pay homage to those of you who write in to the Solid Verbal question line. That's solidverbal@gmail.com. Folks will leave messages on Twitter. Folks leave messages on Discord, over on Patreon, actually on Patreon proper when we put up a post.
Yep.
We're not getting text messages, thankfully. That's one fewer place we have to check. But you name it, all modern communication channels are factored in here when it comes to our Q&A episodes. So without further ado, where are we going first?
All right, let's start here. I'm going to give priority to our premium elite, you know, certified verballers. We've got a group of alphas here that are asking us questions, so they get priority. Last year, Jen asks, the over-under on Michigan's win total was 7.5. Their 12 wins surprised a lot of people. Which teams do you think are going to surprise everyone this year? Either with far more wins than are expected or with far fewer than expected. And for the record, we are answering or attempting to answer this question before spring ball, before summer, before injuries, before any late transfers, coaching moves, anything like that. So, to you, what qualifies a team as a surprise? Like somebody who is expected to be bad, expected to be good, whatever. And what are the pathways that, let's stay positive at first, that a team can outperform the conventional wisdom of their future?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, you said it. It's March the 10th as most people listen to this show or this part of this show. So it's before spring ball. There will probably be another wave of transfers at some point. That's just not going to stop. So that's another thing that we'll need to factor in at some point. But at least at present, March the 10th, one thing that I think we can use as a guide is returning production, which teams are bringing back a lot. So on the show that we did on Tuesday, we talked a lot about Stanford. Stanford went 3-9 last year. Stanford's road schedule in 2022 isn't all that optimal. However, they're like third in the nation with respect to returning production.
Right.
That's a team that that is of interest to me. I could see that happening. Another team that kind of falls into the same category is Florida State. Florida State brings a lot back.
Yeah.
Florida State didn't make the bowl game. You know, relative to last year, I think Florida State's got to be better than they were a year ago. But what is the expectation? We haven't seen over unders yet, so we're kind of flying blind.
Yep.
From that standpoint, Stanford, I think, is an easy candidate. Florida State, I think, will continue to improve. That's another one that jumps out to me. As for teams beyond that, that could maybe exceed expectations, I'm actually quite interested in Pitt. Pitt, of course, loses Kenny Pickett. Most likely going to be a first round pick. Mark Whipple goes over to Nebraska, but Pitt still has Jordan Addison. They brought over Keaton Slovis, who I think could be a good plug and play guy.
Sure.
I can pull up Pitt's schedule, but my guess is that it's fairly workable. So that's of interest to me. Are there any that jump out to you?
Sometimes teams who lost a quarterback early and have a record that was not necessarily representative of their ceiling, of their potential, like Boston College with Phil Dracovic, who I know because of his size and physical ceiling has garnered some NFL draft talk for next year's cycle. And they finished, 6-6 and almost pulled off wins against good to very good teams like Clemson with, you know, Dennis Grossel, like guys that shouldn't be winning those types of games. So this is year three of Jeff Hafley. I think he just got the extension. So, right, it's returning production, and it's also, to me, a team that even Miami, right? Miami, we don't really have a great concept for, but they certainly look like a different team offensively once Tyler Van Dyke. Now, of course, different staff, different offense, presumably. But that, to me, is interesting when a team made a quarterback change that paid off in big ways. And just in terms of teams developing and improving in a sort of natural state, I think Michigan State could fall off because they had some breaks. And I still think they're going to be very good, but 11-win good, I think, and that's with the bowl game. I think that's asking a lot. Indiana made a lot of wholesale changes. I don't think they're as bad as their 0-9 in the Big Ten record might indicate. They lost a ton of transfers. We'll see. But that's another team I think that's due. Nebraska, obviously, a lot has been talked about how they are better than their record indicated last year. We talked about that on the 3-9 episode. Other teams that are going to make significant jumps in that same way, you know, Michigan went from 7.5 to 12. I actually think Michigan's due to fall off a bit.
Fall back in the other direction, yeah. Yeah, we talked about that before.
lost a ton of key pieces on defense. They lose Josh Gattis. And now, look, they could be getting better at quarterback full-time with J.J. McCarthy if that move, which is looking like it's going to be the case, happens. I don't think Arizona State has the makings of an 8-win program after what they've lost both in on the coaching staff and now at quarterback with Jaden Daniels. I think Arizona is a team that could jump up and make some more noise as a 1-11 program. I think they could win 4 or 5.
Here's an interesting one.
They hit the portal hard. Yeah, hit me.
I think Clemson could be an interesting study here.
Clemson's all over the place for me. Continue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to avoid purposely teams that had coaching changes or have new coaches because,
right,
frankly, that could go any direction. You have no idea.
Yep.
Clemson's interesting because the top guy, Dabo Swinney, is still there, but mm-hmm. a lot of the support staff, top assistants, the AD, guys went everywhere.
Right.
And so they're rebuilding that thing from the inside out. The season last year was quote unquote underwhelming, even though they won 10 games, whatever it was. So it's still a pretty good team. They had a ton of injuries to deal with, but at least on the coaching side, they're going to be starting over in many respects. And that, like you said, kind of all over the map. Could go almost any direction.
Ole Miss is a team that I think could jump back a couple games, winning 10 games with an experienced quarterback. Now it's a Jackson Dart-led team. I think they're going to have a terrific offense, but I just think there is a margin for error involved with Ole Miss. I mean, look, they got to 10 wins with a couple of super close calls, notably that Arkansas game, and that's going to be the case every year. Texas A&M is interesting to me. Another one of those teams that dealt with a very early quarterback injury. And for better or worse, Zach Calzada was probably at best an 8-win quarterback, which is where Texas A&M finished. They now add Max Johnson. They've got interesting young options. You know, Haynes King is presumably healthy. And with what they've done these past couple years on the recruiting trail, they should be deeper than ever. And who does Texas A&M early on? I think they have Miami. I think they host Miami.
Yep, week 3.
So that's actually a terrific time probably to get a newly coached and a new look Miami team. And Kyle Field's a pretty difficult place to play, generally speaking. I think they could pop up two or three wins.
By the way, that's a perfect segue into Melty's question, which you've got highlighted next. Here is the question. If you got a pair of tickets to any regular season game this year, which would you go to and who would you take?
Okay. So each conference matchup.
And spouses and children not allowed. So, all right. I am approaching this from the standpoint of low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Low-hanging fruit being big neutral site games. Now, I know where you're at on neutral site games. I'm with you. But we've got some really good non-conference games early that are played at neutral sites. The one that I want to talk to you about, well, the two that I want to talk to you about, are both on Labor Day weekend. The first is the Chick-fil-A kickoff game between your Oregon Ducks and Georgia. I think that's just going to be a cool matchup. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see it. I'm excited about that game. We may go to that game. I don't know. Secondly, the next day, I guess it would be on Sunday, September the 4th, Florida State versus LSU. They play it in the Superdome. That could be a hell of a time. Like, if you and I are just like going without any kind of, you know, spouses or kids with us, NOLA's mm-hmm. a pretty good place to go. So I'm looking at that one and I'm thinking, all right, LSU's got a new coach, no expectations. Florida State's going to be loaded for bear. They bring a fair amount back. I think they'll be better based on the question we just answered. That could be interesting. I kind of think that might be my answer.
Yeah, I'm not going to a neutral site game. You give me an opportunity to go to Atlanta or New Orleans and watch it in an NFL stadium. I would love to go to Georgia, Oregon, and I may go to Georgia, Oregon, but if you're going to give me a choice of any of these games, both from an environment, a location perspective, I don't know. We have what? Another Clemson, Notre Dame. Michigan, Ohio State is in Columbus this year.
How about
Texas A&M, Bama is in Tuscaloosa. Continue.
How about Texas against Alabama?
But where's that game?
Game's in Texas, week 2.
Is it, it's in Austin?
In
or
Austin.
Is it at Jerry World?
No, it's in Austin.
That might be my answer. I'm looking right now. It's week 2, so it's about September 10th.
I just looked at this
yesterday. In Austin.
Yeah, it's September the 10th.
I think that's probably my answer. If I get to go to Austin
okay,
and I get to watch that matchup, you have the narrative, Sark and Saban, We presume Quinn Ewers in his second game. I don't know who Texas has week one. The environment at DKR is not the best, but I think it should be pretty electric for Bama. Yeah, and it's the 2009 National Championship rematch. Yeah, I mean, that may be more for food and friends I have in Austin than anything else. I've been to a couple games already at DKR, so there's no novelty factor there. I think that's my answer. Sure. Great.
Excellent. Where are we going next?
Next question. Here, this is in line with that. Cheddar, who is obviously an alpha.
Alpha!
You know, on the Discord server on verballers.com. What is the matchup that would create the best meal if you combine the unique local cuisines from each school? So, you probably have to either do food and drink or entree dessert. So, if you were coming up with a matchup... So you could use, okay, for beer, you could use a number of places.
So you know I'm not going to be good at this one, right? I'm just not as well versed in the travel aspect of college football.
No, I understand.
As you, the former SI tour guy.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to answer this one. I will do my best to tell you with grunts and with guttural sounds what sounds good and what doesn't, but I just don't have the local flavor like you do.
Yeah, it's really difficult to combine foods that would work well together. I think there is something. I'm going to be a selfish homer here. I'll go Oregon LSU because of both the seafood in both places. So you got good seafood in the Pacific Northwest. Obviously, your salmon, you have your special, your gooey ducks, right? Mm. The huge oyster type things. And you have the Cajun food. And you have the beer. And you have the wine. You have breweries in Oregon. You've got a wine area, if you're into wine. Vintner? Is that what a wine enthusiast is called? And then all the crazy food of Louisiana, all the incredible food, your Cajun influence. So that's probably my answer. That would give us both a good football matchup and a good food matchup. You can go across the country very easily. You can go, you know, Mexican food with USC or UCLA. Just geographically, USC is going to give you better Mexican food in that downtown LA area than you're going to get in, you know, Westwood. You can pair that with somewhere that does really good beer or whatever. But yeah, that's probably my dream. And we got that, albeit on a neutral site, Oregon LSU in like 2011. There it is. How about that?
Sure. I'm thinking like a Wisconsin-Ohio State matchup this year between the Brats and there are some good breweries
in Columbus?
And around Columbus. Yeah, just craft brewery type places. None that I could probably name off the top of my head. I think Great Lakes Brewing, is in Ohio. But that's a tough question.
You can get some Jenny's ice cream.
Yeah.
If you really want to go dairy heavy. With, you know, Wisconsin bringing the brats and cheese curds and finish it off with some ice cream with Jenny's. Not a sponsor, could be. That's pretty good.
Is there anything you could mix with Skyline Chili in Cincinnati?
I would prefer not to. That might be last on my list. Cincinnati has very good food. I'm not into that.
All right.
No, there's a lot of interesting things you could do with that answer. Just let us know. Just, you know, tweet at us, Instagram, whatever.
Next topic.
Next question. Frank wants to know, who do you think will do better over the next few years at their new locations? Lincoln Riley or Mario Cristobal, aka Mario Cristobal? Both are top recruiters and proven winners. They're both moving from small towns with strong football programs to big-time beach cities with a lot to offer five-star kids in addition to football. Both enter weak conferences, joining historically great football brands, falling recently. And Dan adds parenthetically, the last 15 to 17 years on hard times.
Yeah.
Who is better set up for, and who do you expect to, if we return to this question in 2027, 2028, somewhere along there, who has more, whatever measure of your success, 10-win seasons, conference crowns, playoff appearances?
I'm inclined to say Lincoln Riley and USC.
Okay.
I am focused primarily right now on the recruiting beat. And these are two areas of the country that have a fertile crescent of sorts when it comes to...
Fertile crescent.
Yeah. High school prospects.
Yep. Okay.
But I feel like USC now being kind of the splashy program led by the younger guy, Lincoln Riley, I feel like it's going to go a long way towards keeping some of those kids home. So I think they've got a built-in recruiting advantage there. I think Lincoln Riley, with only because he's bringing his own guys over from Oklahoma, is going to be able to get that thing out of the gate to a hot start. And I think he's going to be able to use that to propel the program forward. As Frank said, both sides of this equation are pretty weak from a conference standpoint. Like, you've obviously got Clemson to deal with in the ACC. You know, there are other teams that have gotten better in the ACC as well. So maybe a little bit more resistance there, but I feel pretty good about Lincoln Riley out West.
I think my answer is Mario Cristobal. And I think Miami is more serious about pouring resources into the program when you look at how much money they spent on their staff, when you look at what Mario Cristobal was able to do in bringing up Oregon's resources and commitment to football and building out that program. What Lincoln Riley has done in terms of staff hires, I doesn't leave me all that excited.
Are
I
we think comparing staves here?
Staves. Well, yeah. We are comparing paths, and we're comparing. I mean, look, it's the division and conference in which these teams play. It's the ability to find and develop a quarterback into a huge success, and the ability to build up consistent talent and depth on the roster. I have no doubt that Lincoln Riley is going to continuously find quarterbacks. I have no doubt that Lincoln Riley is going to elevate USC's regional and national recruiting. My question is, can the region produce enough lineman depth for USC to provide confidence in me saying, yeah, they'll win 10 plus games every year, when USC is just hasn't been that place? Miami hasn't either, but their pathway within that division is pretty clear. Depending on what you believe in terms of North Carolina right now and Brent Pry and Virginia Tech, the ceiling just seems so much higher for Miami. But again, this is a Miami team. How many ACC crowns are we talking about?
I believe that'd be zero. Big old goose.
Zero.
Yeah.
So you are taking a chance with, you're taking more of a risk with Miami. Mario Cristobal has taken precisely zero teams to the college football playoff, right?
That is factually correct, Dan. And yeah. Also, I'd add as a counterpoint, we've heard this song and dance on the Miami front before.
Of course.
We joked about it when they hired Cristobal. It seems like a race to get the most Miami guy possible to coach mm-hmm. the program. So having him there, look, I do believe he's a cut above what they've had before. He's a known recruiter. He's a good coach. Mm-hmm. He's a good coach. I think he will get them going in the right direction. I truly, honestly believe that. But in terms of who can get a program up and running quicker, I think the answer there is Lincoln Riley. And I think if you do it, I think if you bring Caleb Williams over, if he continues to have the success that we believe he'll have, right, that's just going to feed back into the allure of the program. That's going to jumpstart that recruiting operation and take it to a level that it hasn't been at in quite some time.
And he should have 2 years of Caleb Williams, whereas Tyler Van Dyke might only be in Miami for another 1 year. So I am banking on the ACC providing for less resistance than the Pac-12 at this point, just because Utah exists, just because the talent ceiling of Oregon is pretty impressive. Otherwise, I don't know, there's not much in the Pac-12. And same could be said, you know, Clemson's not necessarily heading in the right direction. I think just Miami right now, I think they can build a deeper defense. And to me, that is just, I think what Miami's roster can look like is more impressive than what USC's roster can look like.
Fair enough.
So I'm going with Mario and Miami in the next 5 years or so. Next question. 10 years ago, I could never have imagined we'd be in the era of the portal and of players picking schools based on NIL deals.
Yeah.
What do you think will be the biggest factors shaping the game in 2032? Ty, how old will you be in 2032 approximately?
I don't want to talk about that. Don't want to talk about that.
That no one is talking about now, as Ty would be then a dude having entered his sixth decade of life.
That's correct. That is factually correct.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, thank you. Anytime mm-hmm. you get a question like this, the answer is always in forever lasers, right?
Of course, obviously. Drones, lasers, laser drones, drone lasers. Yep.
I think the answer is lasers, Dan, who asked mm-hmm. the question, Dan. A couple things come to mind, but kind of on that same note.
Yeah.
Technology is definitely shaping the way we view all sports.
Yeah.
I would expect 10 years from now that VR is going to be a big deal, a much bigger deal than it is now.
Think so? Okay.
I think so. So in terms of how it shapes the game, maybe not on field, but the fan experience, I could see going in a direction where VR is a thing. And how we experience the game at home is very much driven by optics, literal optics that we put on our head. I think that could be a thing. I'm going to hold out hope that in 10 years we can put a chip in a ball and we don't have to leave it to Dean Blandino or guys somewhere in a truck with 8K televisions to figure out did the ball cross the line or not. We got to be able to put the chip in the ball, Dan.
Yeah.
Got to be able to do that. Somebody can do that now. Mm-hmm. I got to believe that's going to be one of the next revolutions that comes over the next 10 years.
We could have robot umpires for baseball, and yet we don't.
They shot that down, right?
I know. I saw that. That's a bummer.
They shot that down. Robots is another answer in line with the lasers.
Yeah.
Will we see any robotics, Dan?
I think the organization of the sport is going to look a whole lot different. I think things are going to continue to consolidate. College football has shown itself, and all major sports have shown themselves to be entities that don't move backwards. And so if we are talking about a sport in which conferences are getting bigger and are focusing on television money, then things are going to further consolidate. The idea of college football, for better or worse, I say for worse, has been to chase the NFL model. So I think we're going to end up with fewer conferences. I think we're going to end up with a much more consolidated sport, chasing more and more TV money. The playoff will continue to expand. I don't know the exact year. I don't know if it's by 2032, whatever. We know it's going to expand at least to 6, 8, 10, 12 games before then. But I think there will be a reckoning at a certain point where a bubble will burst. And there will have to be a conversation around, okay, college football is now a national sport. Do we have a national governing body? That, to me, is going to be the biggest change. I think by 2032, there will be a national governing body in place, not necessarily in the way that the college football playoff governing body exists, because it's not really a governing body, just an organizational grouping. I think there is going to be a fundamental shift between the haves and have-nots, and there will be a governing body that is saying, okay, these are the rules, be it about NIL, be it about any sort of payment, be it about actual rules, be it about scholarships, be about scheduling. I think there will be a major shift in how the sport is organized and governed, and that there will be a group. I don't know if there's a commissioner. I don't know if there's a board. I don't know if there's some sort of consortium of conference commissioners that come together and make the rules for the sport. But I think we are heading in that direction where college football sees the amount of money on the table and says, if we can get our act together and turn this into more of a machine, turn this into a full organization, then we can do better financially and we can spread the resources around more effectively. So that's my answer.
Yeah. I mean, the money aspect here, I think, has potential to change a lot. Now, at time of recording, it is March. It is 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Reportedly, EA Sports is dropping the new college football game in 2023.
Yep.
I haven't seen that confirmed, but that's the report. That, I think, could actually drive change in a pretty big way. And especially with respect to things like NIL. And especially with respect to representation for the players. And where that whole movement goes next. Because suddenly we're talking about a pretty big source of, income for everybody, sort of a common denominator, if you will. How that is handled, how that affects things on the NIL front moving forward is going to be really interesting to see. But could it drive us to the place? Could it drive the sport to a place where we're talking about things like commissioners, where we're talking about things like collective bargaining? I don't know. I might be getting a little bit over my skis here, but that, I think, could be a pretty big moment for us as we examine this question over the next decade.
I also don't think, and I think this is, and just from talking to people, I don't think prospects, maybe the top of the top of the top, with all things being equal, make a decision that heavily weighs NIL stuff. But I still think the schools that have the most money are already the schools who are generally really good, who have those huge donor bases. Look, Texas hasn't been good in quite some time, and they have that donor base, and they could organize, and they could, you know, put together these collectives that pay top recruits whatever X amount of dollars. But also, you still have to want to play for Texas. You still have to want to play for Tennessee or Florida State or USC or any of these places that are sort of trying to use NIL in a big way. And so I still don't think somebody is going to exclusively go to a place because of short-term earning. I still think that we are selling kids and their intellect and decision-making abilities a little bit short when we assume that that's 100% of the process. So I think specifically NIL is going to get a lot more organized. And we talked about this with Matt Brown. You can go back and listen to that podcast from a few weeks ago. He was excellent in that this is still the infancy of the name, image, likeness era. And so markets will correct themselves, will better organize themselves, and you know, far be it for me to just assume major sports knows what it's doing, because you look across a major sport knows what it's doing. You look across the Olympics, you look across baseball and the NFL, like there's no rhyme or reason to anything. I think there is going to be a reckoning with gambling.
That's gonna be an interesting one. Yeah. We got a question about that. Of course, yeah. It's in the news right now. My hunch is that a lot of folks listening have seen the Calvin Ridley news and
right
where things stand with him being in the NFL and gambling and that whole disaster that we're going to see play out in real time.
Yep.
But gambling money is a thing, man. Will colleges more openly embrace it? Will conferences, will the playoff more openly embrace it? I don't know. If the gambling companies had their druthers, they would. It would be a tighter relationship. You might have logos on uniforms. I don't think we'll get there, but
right.
It definitely has the potential to, I think, affect things in a pretty big way.
Here is the certainty. And this is, you know, a couple days, 3-4 days after the Calvin Ridley being suspended for a year for betting, what do you say, $1,500?
Yeah.
On parlays, NFL parlays, including the Falcons to win. So he wasn't betting against his own team, which I guess is something. But the certainty, the 100%, is going to be a wife, a nephew, a son, a brother, a parent of somebody within a program having inside information, putting $10,000 on a game and it being traced back. That, and I'm fully making this up, that PJ Flex nephew puts $8,500 down on the Gophers because they surprisingly got back a quarterback who had been injured and nobody knows this. Or that has intel that a key player, usually a quarterback, sometimes a running back, is out with a surprise injury. Is, you know, he was hung over and snapped his ankle trying to jump over a fire hydrant or something the night before a game. And there's going to be suspicious money pushed around a game that will be traced back to a big name coach. That, to me, with how easy it is to gamble, and Calvin Ridley did this on his phone, correct?
Yep. Yep.
That is, it's going to be too enticing for somebody with inside information, and it's going to be connected to a coach or a strength coach or whoever, or a, you know, a girlfriend or whatever of a player. We'd be like, ooh, this is a little bit fishy and too suspicious, and it's going to be further investigated, and there might be repercussions involved somehow. That, to me, by 2032, 100% will happen. Maybe by the end of 2022.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Next question.
Next question. Nordencam. I don't know if I'm
Nordencam, right. Sure.
From Instagram. How can Tennessee prepare its defense for the workload of always being on the field?
Wow.
I assume that's sort of for better or for worse, and Hendon Hooker's coming back. Tennessee's offensive footprint per Bill C, they had the number one pace in college football last season. So for better or worse, meaning they'll go three and out quickly or they'll bomb it down the field and score quickly. And I don't anticipate that style changing anytime soon. How do you account for that, Coach Ty?
I'm not a coach. I'm a podcaster.
Yeah,
we're talking about true class on grass here with that Tennessee offense, number one pace. First off, one way that you can help account for it is by making your offense as efficient as possible. If you're going to be on the field for a very short period of time, make sure you get the most bang for the buck.
Of course.
So any way that you can make the offense better, if that's...
So you're saying score points.
Score points, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying quite literally score points if you're going to be running NASCAR offense. That's the first thing. The second thing, I guess, comes down to the type of players that you're recruiting, the types of guys that you're putting out there. All you got to do is watch the NFL Combine to realize that athletes are a little bit different now than they were 10 years ago. There are so many more guys that are out there now that kind of fit that hybrid mold than what we'd see a decade ago. If you're Tennessee, any guys like that, any guys that can be versatile, that can play a bunch of different positions, that, you know, have stamina. You can't really afford to go out there with 350-pound defensive linemen. Those guys are going to get gassed. So you need to be able to build a defense that I think has much more of a hybrid look and feel to it, so that you can get your guys in space and they're not going to die when they're on the field the entire game.
One, slow down a little bit. Not fully. Have different speeds. There was an old Chip Kelly story that, you know, as fast as Oregon was playing when they really started playing with that kind of tempo, they had red, yellow, and green. They had green for when it was go, 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 go. They had yellow when it was like hurry up and then get to the line and look over, so the other team still can't substitute. And then a much slower, like milking the clock type pace. So Tennessee, with what little Josh Heupel inherited, said, okay, one of our advantages, if we don't have a great offensive line, is going to be the speed at which we play, because that will gas teams and that will mitigate any issues we have along the offensive line. And they developed running backs. You know, they were able to play and win in different ways. Tyon Evans came on in the middle of the year, of course, and they were bombing it downfield. And it worked really, really well once Hendon Hooker took over as the full-time starting quarterback. Here's what you can do. You can... The most difficult and most obvious answer is recruit a super talented and deep defense. You just rotate guys in and out, keep them fresh, and then you can get off the field quicker because you're constantly rotating in fresh legs. That's what Georgia was able to do last year. Pretty hard to replicate. Pretty hard to replicate, and Georgia didn't have an offense that played with the pace that Tennessee's played with.
Right, exactly.
But they were constantly bringing guys in and out of the game. This was, and when you recruit the way that Georgia did in the few years leading up to 2021, you can do that. Another way is you just got to get off the field. And how do you get off the field? Well, you get off the field with turnovers. There's a randomness to that. But you can teach a defense to give itself the best chance at generating turnovers. And, you know, preaching strips, preaching, you know, hands in passing lanes to get the ball into the air. You can look at the teams and the coordinators and assistants who have been a part of a defense that have been especially good at getting off the field on third down, especially good at fielding defenses that have high three and out percentages, and that all those numbers are readily available. And you look at the teams who are able to, even without a ton of talent, maybe you look at the FCS level, maybe you look at, you know, G5 level, whatever, the teams who are able to force an uncharacteristically low completion percentage from quarterbacks, right? That they're able to generate confusion, that they're able to sow, you know, to get that extra second or 2 seconds that makes a quarterback hesitate. Find those guys. And so if you are fully dedicated to playing with that kind of pace, you need to be dedicated to robust rotation and finding a coach who is especially adept at confusion. That, to me, is how you do it.
Do we think Heupel can do that?
Yes. Yeah. I think if Tennessee has its affairs in order more so than usual, that they are not going to be outbid for assistant coaches. An assistant may choose to go elsewhere who has options, but I don't think it's going to be a money thing. I think the more that they win, the more interest they're going to generate from regional talent. We've seen that they're not going to be outbid from an NIL perspective, as you know, the collective has allegedly come together to pool together money to compete on the recruiting trail. So I think Josh Heupel is all in on running both a modern offense and a modern program. So I don't know if that results in 10, 11 win seasons more often than not, but I think Tennessee is trying to give itself every chance in the world to do that. We'll see what they end up at quarterback. That's going to be huge because they're competing with some of the best nationally. But I think it's going to be an especially attractive offensive style that will attract top quarterbacks in the years to come. But yeah, the defense thing is going to remain a question. You need to stay out in front and be innovative and really look at the guys who consistently get their own defenses off the field.
Yeah, and to that point, Dan, if you're talking about things like turnovers, if you're talking about havoc rate, right, we're talking about creating plays when the defense is on the field to try and maybe tilt the scales in your favor. One of the factors that I think, you know, we had talked about at some point or another, Tennessee's defense was pretty good this year, but Tennessee as a blitzing team was not necessarily where it needed to be. So if you're talking about this equation where your defense is always on the field, your offense is only on the field for a small percentage of the time, you got to get the most out of those blitzes. That's one area for improvement for Tennessee in 22 and beyond.
The good thing about Tennessee in year one was that their special teams was also pretty good.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about the hidden yards and what you force teams into, if you are forcing bad field position a lot because of touchbacks from kickoffs and deep punts and sound, coverage and, you know, guys staying in their lanes and making tackles where they should, you're giving yourself every chance in the world to get off the field if you're pinning teams pretty consistently. And also, if you're making special teams that result in short fields for your offense, if you're blocking kicks or whatever, if you're doing what it takes in special teams, you also change the calculus a little bit because all of a sudden you're up 14-3 and a team who's not used to playing from behind and doesn't necessarily have an offense built to play from behind is suddenly chucking the ball a lot and a lot more than usual, and that's stopping the clock and that's getting their own offense off the field. So I think there are a lot of things you can do on the margins. And honestly, I think Tennessee will give itself every chance to do so. They are one of the few programs that, even without a lot of recent success, will attempt to spend their way to success, which is, I think it's better than not. So
here, here.
I think there you have our answer. Mean Joe A.
Oh, that's a different Mean Joe than I was expecting.
Different Mean Joe. Is West Virginia in trouble? number one for transfers in the portal. I can't confirm that. I did go to their transfer page on 24/7, and there's a lot of WVU and then an arrow pointing elsewhere and not as much pointing towards WVU from elsewhere.
Yeah.
Is West Virginia, in your mind, in trouble under Neil Brown?
Well, if we harken back to the returning production thing that I mentioned before, West Virginia is, they're looking for people.
Yeah.
They're looking for people who could come in and run things. It's going to be a lot of new faces, especially on offense for West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of don't know directionally which way this program's going. And I've struggled with that over the last two seasons, especially last season. 2020 was weird, but 2021, you know, was sort of all over the place. Still have a little bit of PTSD from that bowl game. The bowl game against Minnesota, what was it, 18-6?
18-6, yep.
It's a really bad offensive showing there. The reason that I struggle with West Virginia is because there are moments where you see that level of effort that you expect, right? There was a one score loss. Well, they lose by 3 points on the road to Oklahoma. Oklahoma was sort of in disarray early, but still,
right?
You know, you're looking at that game thinking, well, geez, they lost 16-13. They must be doing something right, especially on defense. There were other games. They beat Iowa State. They beat Iowa
and
State.
Followed
this
that
year.
Up with what? What did they follow up the Iowa State win with? Like scoring 3 against Oklahoma State?
They lost by 21 to Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
At home.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of been all over the map. I beat Texas, right? Texas wasn't any great win, but like there's not enough consistency there in terms of when they're getting their wins and when they're not getting their wins. And that scares me a little bit. I don't know if we've seen that consistency on the uptick in the time that Neil Brown's been in Morgantown.
Right.
And as you're trying to build something and directionally just get it going in a good way, like you would hope that you start to see something that's just a little bit more reliable across the board. And that's what frightens me. Now, we can go into numbers. We've got all the numbers.
Right.
I'm sure you've got the same stuff in front of you that I have in front of me, but the consistency aspect of this is what really frightens me.
So West Virginia is in a really difficult place. So, okay, West Virginia plays in a conference that it is not in a largely geographic footprint of. So you go to high schools on the East Coast and the Southeast, and you say, come play at West Virginia. We'll see you in Lubbock. We'll see you in Waco. And it's very difficult to convince players to come to Morgantown to play far away, specifically and especially when, what the hell is West Virginia football under Neil Brown? Under Dana Holgorsen, you're like, super creative, fast, fun offense to play in it, to be a quarterback in, to be a receiver in, to be a running back in. There is a brand, there is an identity to West Virginia football that was extremely positive and extremely enticing from my vantage point. If you are a perhaps undersized receiver from Florida, like they were able to get so much out of, or North Carolina or South Carolina, wherever, somewhere in that footprint, Pennsylvania, excuse me. Under Neil Brown, it's sort of, and this is to borrow an NBA term, it's kind of a program on the treadmill of mediocrity. If you are in the portal looking for playing time, looking to contribute to a major program, West Virginia was just kind of average last year. So you can't go to West Virginia and say, man, they need a lot of help on defense. I'm going to immediately come in and play and show out in a major conference in the Big 12. If you're an offensive player, if you're a receiver, of which I think they've lost 4 or 5 in the portal specifically this year, what was your experience these last couple of years playing receiver? You're catching 5-yard passes from Jarrett Daigie, who's now at Western Kentucky? So they don't hit the portal hard for a quarterback. They hire Graham Harrell to hopefully improve the branding of that offense. But it's not like, what was he able to do at USC with top-tier talent?
Right.
A ton. Those were disappointing offenses with a ton of NFL receivers. They part ways with Vic Caning in 2020. And so, there are guys that are recruited by him or thinking they're going to play in that specific defense. And so that changes. And so you're just sort of in no man's land right now at West Virginia. Because what are you going there to do definitively?
Yeah.
I can't answer that question. Like, it's
well,
just
the identity, right? The identity is what you're getting at. It's a good question, and it sort of is pervasive across the board.
Right.
What is your identity in terms of like a geographic college football thing? Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you're removed, at least right now, at present, from the center of gravity of your conference. You're like a half a world away, half a country away.
Yep.
What is your identity on offense, on defense? My point was going to be especially around the quarterback position, right? Jarrett Daigie threw 19 touchdowns this year to 12 interceptions. Mm-hmm. If inconsistency is my overarching theme here, that's a pretty good place to look.
Sure.
And I like Jarrett Daigie. He's all right. He completed 65% of his passes, but inconsistency was pretty much there across the board. Doing the little things well has definitely not been a hallmark of Neil Brown's time in Morgantown. And that type of stuff adds up over time. It just does.
Yeah. And I think transfers, and this is clearly stating the obvious, transfers on that huge level at such a big number indicate people don't want to be there. And for whatever reason, be it the losing, be it the uninspired identity, be it the culture within the program, be it the location of the program, be it the conference of the program, it's not a big long-term indicator of a turnaround, of a quick turnaround. And so if you're a defensive player, if you're Vandarius Cowan, who's heading to, I think, Maryland, right? He was he a Bama player before West Virginia? Is this his second transfer? You can look that up. You're holding teams to 16 points and losing. You're holding teams to 18 points in a bowl game and losing by scoring. I don't think they scored a touchdown. I think that six was two field goals. You can fact check me on that as well. It's just like at a certain point, you're going to say, we're holding up our end of the bargain, and the offense has not getting better. So that to me is the issue with West Virginia is there's not a lot you can point to during the Neil Brown era where you're like, this is what this program is, and that's what excites me.
Yeah,
and right now it's an attention economy. And God, I sound like a dumb tech bro when I say
that.
But it is. And what is West Virginia doing to garner attention?
Neil Brown's 41 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one of the younger coaches out there. Mm-hmm. He's going to go into year four with a mark of 17 and 18 in Morgantown. That is in stark contrast to what he did at Troy, where the first year was bad and then he won double digits the next three. Different set of circumstances, obviously.
Sure.
Completely different. But we have not seen that turnaround story at all with West Virginia. 2019, 5-7. 2020, mm-hmm. 6-4. Weird COVID year, make of it what you will. Last year, finished the year 6-7. So by and large, 500 program under Neil Brown. Need to see if he can turn things around in a good direction. Why don't we take one more question?
All right. This is from an alpha from Patreon.
Alpha.
In memory of Charles Entenmann, the unforgettable fire, would like to know. Ty, did he just recently pass, Charles Entenmann?
I've never heard of that person in my life.
Well, Entenmann's, the supermarket brand.
Never heard of that.
Cookies and donuts. You've never heard of Entenmann's?
No.
It must be weirdly regional and you're on the outside.
Yeah.
What is your favorite breakfast pastry or your go-to breakfast pastry?
Yeah, yeah.
Talk me through your stance on breakfast pastry. I don't really eat in the morning, but that doesn't mean I don't eat breakfast pastries. Just a different time of day.
Yeah. I mean, I love a good breakfast pastry. I'm a big time fan of it. I love a good blueberry muffin.
Okay. Talk me through your ideal blueberry muffin.
Well, the problem that I see with a lot of blueberry muffins is, you know, I'm a connoisseur of such.
Always.
They make them too big.
That's your complaint?
No, it's not a complaint, but it's just...
You just said they're too big. That sounds like a complaint.
It's not intended as a complaint. But
okay.
You can't eat those things without a fork and a knife. It's impossible. If you try to eat the full blueberry muffin just by sticking it in your mouth, you look like you're a barbarian.
That's true.
Because they're huge.
And then you don't rip off chunks?
Then you get crumbs all over you. No. Okay. I want the primal blueberry muffin experience. I'm not ripping off chunks. I'm just sticking the thing in my mouth.
Okay.
And so when you make the gargantuan blueberry muffin, that's a problem. That's my only real, if you want to call it, complaint. Okay. With blueberry muffins. But beyond that, yeah, I like if I get fresh blueberries in there.
Uh-huh.
I like if they've got...
Have you ever made blueberry muffins? They're pretty easy.
Never made it.
Okay.
I like if they've got like the sugar flakes on top.
Always great.
That give you a little bit extra kick in the morning, just to get you going. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Texture.
I like it if they're cold, actually.
Okay. A refreshing blueberry muffin. Yeah.
I like if they've been in the refrigerator.
Whoa. Okay. Unexpected twist.
Yeah. I like that feel. I like that texture. Do you have an answer?
Well, I have blueberry muffin thoughts if you want to talk more blueberry muffin.
You can talk about whatever you want, Dan.
All right. In a berry muffin, I want something rigid up top. And you go to the temperature for something that stiffens it a little bit, the cold. I would like crystallized sugar or pearl sugar, which sort of look like sesame seeds, but little baking sugar type things. Maybe a streusel presence,
mm-hmm.
You know, the sort of clustery, crunchy type elements of a muffin. I never hate a streusel top. But I do want that harder top to a muffin. if I'm in that direction. And yeah, the crystallized sugar, the pearl sugar, whatever, I'm great with. I like it warm though. I want that I want a little bit of steam when I open it up, fresh out of the oven.
Mm, yeah.
I'm not a big muffin guy. I do like, so my go-to, if I were to be offered any sort of traditional breakfast pastry, I want an old-fashioned donut, or I want like an apple fritter, something like that.
Mm.
A donut with texture, with ridges, with crevasses. That's what I want. I like a good lemon muffin, but I haven't found a lot of good ones that I love. There was a place in Brooklyn called Smith Canteen that made the best I've ever had. Rest in peace, no longer there. The other breakfast the pastry that I like, you can't find it in a lot of places. It's my definitively like hipster answer. There is a Swedish breakfast pastry. It's kind of like a cinnamon roll, but if you combined the appearance and texture of a garlic knot with the taste of a cinnamon roll. We may have stopped off and got one of these in Austin together.
Okay.
It's called, so you can get it with a cardamom presence.
Okay.
And that's really good. Or just the cinnamon and have the sugar. It's called a kanelbullar. Okay. And I had never had one before going to this place, Easy Tiger, of which you wear an Easy Tiger hat on the show sometimes.
I have the Easy Tiger hat down there, yeah.
But it goes really well with coffee because it's not iced like a cinnamon roll. So it's not that like Cinnabon sweet and dripping kind of thing and messy. It's a little bit smaller and more handheld, and you get the texture from the knots. So I think that is my, and I like the cardamom version. That is my hipster snobby answer. And then apple fritter or blueberry old fashioned donut. If I'm sticking with it, I'm not a big croissant guy. I like babka. Babka can be good as a breakfast pastry because that again has that texture. Yeah.
Here's the problem with this question.
Yeah.
Guys, stop asking us food questions. Stop asking the food questions. All right. He likes food. Dan likes food. He's very good
with the food.
Oh, I like food. Everybody likes food. But yeah, you know food. I don't know anything about any of this stuff. I know something that tastes good when I eat. That's what I know. I'm looking desperately. I can't turn the camera around. I am looking desperately on Google Images to find the name of the thing that I know I like, but I couldn't think of and defaulted to blueberry muffins. Let's just peel back the kimono here and let you know what's going on inside my head. I am desperately searching for an answer here. I looked at these questions beforehand. I still don't know the name of the thing that I actually like.
Can you describe it? We can all work together.
It sort of flakes a little bit.
But it's not a croissant.
It's not a croissant. It's
bigger. Give me a shape.
It could be any shape. It's square. And it's sort of, it doesn't necessarily have like a real sweet flavor to it. Almost like maybe like a cream cheese filling.
Okay.
Of sorts.
So is it more savory? Is it a scone? A savory scone?
No, it's not a scone. It's not a scone. It's just more of like a cream cheese taste to it.
A cream cheese square or rectangular traditional flaky pastry.
Yeah.
Possibly on the more savory side.
Yeah.
And it's not a Pop-Tart.
No, it's not a Pop-Tart.
Did you grow up with Pop-Tarts, by the way? Is that a part of your rotation growing up? Or currently?
I'd say rotation's a bit much, but yes, I mean... Of course, I grew up with Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. I didn't really have that many I like Pop-Tarts, but I didn't really have that many growing up. I'm trying to work through this. So it's a flaky cream cheese breakfast pastry. Flaky cream cheese breakfast pastry.
Like, I'm sure there's a name for this thing that I've got in my head. I don't know what it is.
Are you talking about a Danish?
Sure. I guess.
Yes or no?
I guess. I don't even know what a Danish is. I don't know what the classifications are for these things. I don't.
Do you feel like it is a like specifically like Germanic type influence that it's like unique to Eastern PA?
It looks like Danish is the right answer here. Yes.
Okay.
I like Danishes.
Are delicious.
There it is. I'm a big Danish fan. But other than I don't ask the food questions. I don't know the answers to them. I'm always BSing my way through them. Always. 100% of the time.
Can I ask you another question?
Only about if it's not pastry. About food.
No, it's about food. It's about breakfast pastries. I'm positive you've had this or seen this, and I just want your opinion on it. How do you feel about crumb/coffee cake?
I do like that.
Yeah, of course. It's so good.
Yeah. You ever have good molasses cake?
Is that typically eaten for breakfast?
You can eat it for breakfast.
I mean, you can. Mel Kiper eats pumpkin pie for breakfast.
Yeah, anything for breakfast. Yeah.
Molasses cake.
Yeah.
I've heard of shoe fly pie, which is a molasses pie.
No.
I'm looking at molasses cake. Molasses cake breakfast. Molasses breakfast cake. I mean, that looks very heavy. It looks delicious.
It's extremely heavy. Yeah. No, it'll take you through all the way to like 3 p.m.
Gives you sort of like a gingerbready vibe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ginger vibe. Okay.
Ginger vibe. Yeah.
No, I've never done that for breakfast, but it looks great. Now, crumb cake, Entenmann's crumb cake, to be specific with this question. It's so good.
I have a very limited field of view. People need to understand this about me. I have a very limited field of view when it comes to food. Really, when it comes to life. Are we talking sports? Are we talking tech? Are we talking space? Like, these are things that are very much in the wheelhouse. But
sure,
anything in the food world, forget it. Just, I'm tapping out. I'm getting frustrated here. I'm tapping
out. You've made all sorts of discoveries food-wise in the last 5 years that you've been very happy with.
Yeah, and you know why? It's been because of you.
Yeah.
And it's been because of Solid Wife Kate. On my own, I am a rube. I have no idea about any of this stuff. Whatever. I'm yelling here. I'm going to lose my voice.
It's okay.
I have no idea about any of this stuff. So I have you to thank for avocados. Avocados, of all things. Avocados.
All I can tell you is, everybody's a rube until they're not.
Ah.
If you make an effort to try new things, which I think you do, then you're not a rube.
For 14 years, I'm answering food questions. I don't know a damn thing about any of it. Nothing. I'm making it up on the fly.
We had Korean barbecue a couple years ago that you loved. It's great.
Don't know anything about that either. It tastes good.
Yeah.
But people are like, what's your specific pairing? I don't know.
Yeah,
I have no idea. None.
What about... Now I forget what I was going to ask. But, oh, yeah, you just found it, like, a great Italian deli nearby.
I did.
Like a meatball parm.
But I know Italian food. I'm from an Italian family. That I know. Pizza, actually, I sort of know.
We got to get you to Italy, man. Oof, you know Italian-American food. That's just what I know. I don't know Italian food all that well at all, which I'd like to know more.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on that front. Yeah.
All right. We got to keep this going. We have a bunch of questions about pants, about sauces, more about college football, about child rearing, about marriage.
Great.
Ty, we got a lot to talk about.
I know so much about child rearing. I'm ready. I'm rearing to go.
Yeah.
And I'm getting warmed up now. I'm all warmed up. I'm
like,
the juice is flowing here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. This is
You're
what
agitated.
You get. I'm agitated. Yeah.
Okay. So to everybody listening to this show, who is not a subscribing member of our Patreon at verballers.com. One, you could be. We'd love to have you. Two, it's okay if you're not, but thanks for listening, and we're going to see you next week. We're going to keep this show going for those of you who are subscribers, and that's all I have for those incredibly good-looking people who listen to the show thus far.
Join us for part two.
Yes.
Over on the Patreon, verballers.com, starting now.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.